Hi, I'm Mike Graham with Midwestern Securities, and welcome to this episode on Banking on Growth. With us today, we have our friend Mary Beth Kosmeski from Red Zone Marketing. Welcome, Mary Beth.
It is great to be here, and I have a little orange on today, so I'm kind of wearing the wrong color if I'm Red Zone Marketing, but yeah.
That's all right. We're glad to have you. We've been fans of yours and your work for years, probably going on 10 years, maybe a little bit more even. We participated in a convention that you were involved with in New York approximately 10 years ago, as you spoke to a group of financial institution experts. And we've monitored and stayed in touch with you and your work over the years and have always been impressed with you. So we're very appreciative of your time and your knowledge, what you're going to be sharing with our audience today. But will you start us off with a little bit about yourself and your business, please?
Yeah, sure. So my business is Red Zone Marketing, and I have had this marketing consulting firm for more than 20 years. And when we first opened the doors to Red Zone Marketing, we worked with everyone. But within a very short period of time, we started to focus on the financial services market, primarily because one of our first clients was a financial advisor, and he had a lot of success. So it kind of put me and Red Zone Marketing on the map because of his success. And that led me to speaking at conferences and really being fully niched in financial services with the purpose of helping financial advisors grow their business and helping others in the financial industry get more clients. So since then, I have written 9 books and I have a PhD and all sorts of other things, but that's basically it. We work with and in the financial services industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And from our experience, you're one of the best that's available coaching advisors in the space. As you know, our niche is working with community financial institutions, community banks, and credit unions, helping them build successful, profitable, and compliant retail investment services divisions, adding more products and services to their customers so they don't have to go online or to another competitor, adding more value to their community, more value to their customers, being more of the what we call the financial oasis to help their clients, their customers accomplish whatever is important to them financially, growth, income, tax reduction, risk management. So that's what, as you know, what we do with community financial institutions. What do you see as big brand challenges or opportunities for community banks?
Yeah, you know, I think it's the same challenge that all businesses have, and that is, do I have enough exposure? Do people know enough about me? And is it possible that we can generate more exposure to the bank, to the financial services part of the bank, to the investment side of the bank? How can we be able to do that? And that's the biggest challenge. And that doesn't come easy. You can't snap a finger and go, I'm going to have all this exposure and everyone is going to want to come to my, you know, community bank. It's just not the way that it goes. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes, you know, a plan.
Where does that planning process start? Can you walk us through how you think a community financial institution should engage in that process?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's real internally in the community financial institution. You have people probably already there that understand the market, the landscape, you know, where you guys are at within the other opportunities and availabilities in that local area. And how do you take advantage of that? How do we develop better relationships? And so we often say it's time to start with a strategic marketing plan, which every organization probably already does. But starting with what are we doing right and really taking a deep dive and looking at what we're doing right. And then what are the opportunities for us to get better? And when I say looking at everything, I mean looking at your analytics on social media, looking at how many people are coming to your website, looking at how many people are opening up your email newsletter and clicking and doing things. How much interaction are we having with our customers, with our members, so that we can make sure that we are really focusing on how do we get better. And sometimes word of mouth is the way to get better. But word of mouth, we think it happens by accident, But it really doesn't happen by accident. It's the best companies have a plan for creating more word of mouth and making sure that that they have those relationships that want to talk about, the institution.
So I like the phrase by accident, not by accident, a word that we use a lot is intentionality. And in the community bank space, so most of all the banks that we work with are currently under $1 billion in deposits, okay? That portion of the marketplace is diminishing, right? They're going away. They're getting rolled up for scale, for whatever, for a variety of reasons, why some smaller ones are exiting or why they're partnering with others. But in a lot of the management meetings that we've had with some of these smaller community banks, there isn't an intentionality around marketing. The leadership is running the bank. They may be the president of the bank and their top producing loan officer, and they don't even have an administrative assistant. And then they're also dealing with auditors. Maybe the CFO is able to offload all of that, but you get the idea. They're wearing lots of different hats. What we found probably 15 years ago was the local newspaper or a local ad agency would call and say, what do you want to do this month? And they'd say, all right, who needs a little bit of attention or love, or what do we have resources for? What's on my mind today, this month? And let's run with it. We started to try to help our community bank partners with building a year's worth of marketing campaigns. And we started to say, hey, what can we do? We secret shopped some of the bigger banks. We just walked through and said, what do their lobbies look like? How are they promoting things visually? And we worked with them creating the bifold brochures and the website and the social media presence. We do this just kind of as a value add as the broker dealer. But if we weren't doing this for a lot of these community banks, it would be back to what's the product of the month, the flavor of the month, it's the radio person calling, it's the newspaper person calling. So a lot of our institutions that we work with in the under $1 billion market are doing really, really well. They're making they're making a difference in their customers' lives. They're providing great financial services. They're doing it profitably. They're doing it compliantly. They're adding a huge value to their community. But they may not even have the resources to get started and to think intentionally about this. So any thoughts on how we can help, how you could help them even get started into something that's more professional than what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, certainly these institutions could hire, Red Zone Marketing or a firm like ours or another, local marketing firm or something like that. But the key is to allot the time. It's number one, allot the time to set aside and go, what are we doing in terms of marketing? Is it working? Is it not working? And even when you guys are putting together the website and the social media, what's the content management plan? Is it working for our local community? And if not, how can we add things in? But I love the fact that you've got sort of a year plan. But the key is we always have to be evaluating. Everything in marketing is changing. And so that's one of the reasons we go, I'm just going to offload it to the local newspaper. I mean, I'm not even sure how people are, if they're really reading the newspapers anymore and things like that. But, if we could just offload it to someone, and I don't think it's quite that easy, but there are a lot of marketing firms that specifically work with financial institutions. And some of them are not super expensive, but it's finding that time to sit down and go, what's working, what's not working, what do we need to do? Because if things are going well today, that's great. How do we make sure things are going well tomorrow? And the day after, and the day after, and that we continue to have great customers and a great pipeline of new customers. And we've got this great word of mouth, and we're really contributing in our community, and people care. about what we're doing. I mean, those things are all really, really important. What a lot of larger banks do, obviously, is they have internal marketing people. And it's the most efficient and effective way is to have a marketing person on site, someone whose focus is marketing. Now, I know if people are wearing a million different hats, we're not going to hire a marketing person. But I would say that that would be the number one kind of thing to think about is, you know, can we have somebody internally that's going to manage this for us, that's going to analyze it for us? If not, firms like mine, Red Zone Marketing, can certainly help out with those kinds of things, but more as an outsource, not as someone who's going to be doing the day-to-day stuff. And the way that social media goes today, we kind of want to be out there in the community and posting and always aware. And there's tons of content for a community financial institution. It's just a matter of, well, what are we paying attention to? What are we using? What can we use in terms of content and pushing things to our customers and all of those kinds of things? It's like, it's a lot of work, but if you have someone who's focused on it internally, it's really not. And so I think that that's important thing to note is that, you know, it might be time maybe to hire a marketing person, to hire somebody who's going to be, and it could even be a part-time person, but someone who's going to be responsible for doing all the things that are necessary to keep the prospects keep coming in and keep wanting to do business with this community institution, and all the other good things that come with that.
Some of our banks are doing an excellent job. They've got their, we spoke to that segment that hasn't done anything, doesn't have the capacity, they're very reactive. A lot of our community bank and credit union partners do have somebody. I seek a mentor and I seek a coach. I'm the president of a broker dealer and RIA, but I still want mentors and I still want people around me that can kind of lift my lid, if you will, and open my horizons, my eyes to bigger horizons. So we have some of those too that can and need to utilize additional ongoing professional development, continuing education, you know, kind of mind expansion type of ideas. And that's where I could see, you guys being just a great, easy addition to their team. Do you have any ideas, speaking to community banks in that type of world, how do they approach differentiation with the, one side is they're differentiating from the other bank across the street, and the other side is differentiating from 1,000 banks on their phone?
That's right. And the way to do that differentiation, and I think every community financial institution knows this, is that it's the relationships. It's the relationships that we have. You know, part of it is location, but when the location is on your phone, as you said, that's pretty easy. But you can't talk to people on their phone necessarily when you're on your banking thing. I mean, I've seen some of the online banks and you want to talk to somebody, good luck, and I think a lot of people still want to talk to somebody and still want to have a relationship that expands beyond putting some money in the bank. It's also having a loan and just having that relationship. And I think that the differentiation comes between a bank and between, the online opportunities. It's the relationship that you have with your current customers and how important that is and how they value that relationship. And that's why your frontline people in the community financial institution is so important, because that's where the relationship is. And that's kind of what they think of. They enjoy going into the bank. And when people enjoy going into the bank, and there's not a lot of people necessarily, it used to be, Fridays, it's like everybody's at the bank, like depositing their checks or doing whatever. And it just doesn't seem like it's the same thing anymore. But there still are the reasons why you want to go into that community bank and that you want to have that relationship. And I think part of it is, figuring out what are those relationship pieces? Why would somebody want to come in here? Why would they stay in here? And I would say if a community financial institution did not know why, I would do a survey of your customers. Why do you continue doing this? Why do you, stay with us? What is it about the relationship that you enjoy? And and being able to really get some good feedback from the people that are already your customers. And that actually produces lots of content to say that, you know, 90% of our customers say XYZ, right? So it's a good way of using your own customers to validate your value.
I love it. It's really good stuff. So not by accident, AKA intentional. Time, give it the time, focus on it. Survey your customers, build content around what's important to your customers. And the advantage that the community financial institutions have is their proximity to their customers. They're closer to the street.
Yeah. Right. That's right. And they're paying attention in the community to the community. That's why they're a community institution. And I think that we can't forget about those kinds of things either, is it's not just because we've got a brick and mortar place in the middle of town. It's how are we interacting with the community? And that's all part of, you know, what we maybe wouldn't think of as marketing, but I certainly would.
Do you have thoughts on how you differentiate a financial advisor inside of an institution versus outside of an institution?
Yeah, I mean, there's the one-stop shop kind of a thing where, you know, you've got all of your financial resources in one place. And it's easy to do all of those things. And today, you know, people have accounts over here and they've all things all over the place. And it adds to the stress of, you know, your finances. And I think that one of the ways to help with that is to have everything under one roof with people you trust, with people you like, with people who are supporting you, and with people who actually want to help you with your financial situation. You know, the outreach is there. And so I think that that's the value of somebody who's inside a financial institution as opposed to somebody who is, you know, just a financial advisor at, you know, another place. But even the big firms are doing that. You know, a lot of the big firms, they have a bank also. Why do they have that? Because it allows them to keep everything under one roof for their customers, and community banks can certainly do that in the same way and probably much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the idea of reducing the stress of your financial situation, right? Taking that stress away. We focus so much on this will help you. It'll make it easier. It will make it easier to manage. You know, you've got a team around you that can focus on your safe and liquid money, your debt management, good debt, bad debt, your investments, tax advantages. But we always look at it from what will it do? That's more accretive. And I don't know that we've ever looked at it from what will it take away. And it will take away, you know, we've looked at it, it'll take away complexity, it'll take away difficulty managing it. But those things come down to stress. It'll take away the stress that is the result of that complexity and that difficulty managing assets at different firms. So I really like that approach.
Well, I think the other part, Mike, about that is, you know, you think about doctors and prescriptions and all of those kinds of things, and they're trying to all communicate with one another so that one doctor isn't prescribing something that another doctor has prescribed something that's going to have a bad interaction. And so it's trying to keep everything under one roof where, you know, and I think that's the same thing in financial services where the other part that's like the stress issue that can be taken away, it's also the ability to provide the best recommendations. Or on the other hand, the ability to avoid, doing something that's not in your best interest because somebody wasn't looking at the whole picture. Somebody didn't know the whole situation. Oh, you already have this over here. Oh, we didn't know that. Well, if you've got everything in one place, they're going to know all those things. And it's easier to make recommendations and it's easier to not make mistakes and to provide something that's in the best interest of the client. And I think, so I use the example of, you know, prescriptions and doctors and communicating, and it's hard. It's the same thing in finances, but we don't really look at it that way because we're probably not going to die if we get the wrong, you know, investment advice. But it's the same kind of a thing where wow, this makes sense to do this because we know your whole picture.
Absolutely. So inside of those institutions, right, we agree wholeheartedly that our people are advice driven. They're professionals. They're committed to their community. They know that they've got to live and live in community with the people inside of their community banks and their credit unions. They may see them at the grocery store, right? They may see them at church. They may see them at the basketball game, and that requires a high level of accountability, of commitment to doing your best and acting with the highest degree of integrity and ethical business behavior. How do we help those advisors get in front of more people? We believe their product is a superior product because of those things that you just mentioned and I just affirmed. But how do we help them get in front of more people? Do you have any, a few ideas for the group?
Well, I think for advisors who are already sitting inside that community bank, it's to be in the community bank, right? It's to be out there talking to people, getting to know them. Also doing events and educational seminars is a good way to get to know the people that are inside of that bank already, that are already customers. And but it's also a great strategy to do educational events and things like that for people that are not customers of the bank that can be brought in to be customers of the bank because, you're doing something that's really interesting on, how mortgages are impacted today or something on retirement strategies or, whatever it might be that that could really be interesting to people. So I think that it's getting out there, but it's doing things that you're actually going to have people sign up for or be a part of. And that's where educational events, I think, are one of the best to be able to do that. And they're not hard to put on, but it's something that galvanizes, some people to on topics that are of interest to them.
Do you have any best practices of how an advisor who hasn't done seminar marketing or lunch and learns or whatever they might call it, how they could get started with thinking about how to plan a successful event?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I would do if I was sitting in a community bank and I was a financial advisor is I would talk to some of the wholesalers that are calling on them. The wholesalers have FINRA-approved materials. The wholesalers are speaking all the time. The wholesalers could come in and sort of host the event for you. And so that's one of the things that I would start with because they've got the presentation, they've got the speaking skills, and you can do it and pair up with them to do a presentation, sponsored by them. And it doesn't have to be, it's not a product presentation, but almost all of the wholesaling firms now, the asset managers, have practice management kind of presentations that are for the clients. So that would be where I would start if you've never done it before. That's where I would start.
That's great. So, I mean, I think that, as you know, I hold you and your firm in very high regards. And I think that, you're giving us some good ideas that are simple, very low cost, and very easy to implement. The wholesaler will do it. You don't have to be the content expert. The wholesaler will have the marketing pieces, and you pair it with the database that the bank may already have if their privacy policy is right and we're working with their compliance department in an appropriate manner. And you have the expertise to scale it up on the high end and act like a national agency crafting creative big picture strategy and helping with implementation of those. Can you share an example of a very successful marketing campaign or structure that you've had in the last few years?
You mean like an event or just an entire campaign?
Whichever direction you'd like to go. I was thinking of a campaign.
Yeah. So we've worked with firms to put together a series of things that build what we call a sales funnel. And in order to do that, it's multifaceted. So it's having things that are of interest is the number one important thing, is having things that are of interest to your target market. So if you say, You know, retirement 101, people probably won't be that interested in reading something about that. But if you say something about, you know, how you can make your money last throughout retirement, or how you know that you have enough money to retire, or something that, you know, people have these questions. And so it's getting them interested in something. And usually that happens on social media. So you're getting them interested in, here's a topic that I am interested in. And they may click on it, they may sign up, they may do something that allows them to now get engaged with this financial advisor. And then from there, it's a drip campaign, usually via email, but it almost always starts with social media or a blog. And then it sort of, you continue to communicate and continue to communicate. And you've got a series of emails that are already set and ready to go that aren't salesy, but they're inviting someone to learn more, or they're giving value away. And then eventually there's some asks, you know, would you like to come in for a seminar? Would you like to come in for an educational lunch and learn? Would you like to come in for coffee? Hey, we're having a gathering on Saturday morning at the, you know, at the bank. Would you like to come in and grab some, you know, food and whatever it might be? But it's taking them from being sort of online to coming into the location. And once that happens, then the sales process is fully engaged. But that we call it a sales funnel. And it's really just the more people you can get in the funnel, because you've got interesting things where they can sign up for an email newsletter, they can share their email to learn more, they can like your Facebook page, you know, they can do all these things that will sort of put them in the loop, and then you start communicating. And so it's, like I said, it's multifaceted, and it might sound kind of overwhelming, but it's kind of natural to think about, well, we want to drive people who are interested, and then we're going to keep in touch with them, and we're going to invite them to certain things. But we've got the plan already in place of all these different touch points that we're going to have with that particular person who is interested initially in a social media post.
Yeah, I love it. Requires intentionality, time, patience.
Right? Yeah.
Do you have a feel for how many touches does it typically take from the time that somebody, a qualified prospect, gets in the funnel to they become a customer?
It depends. And we've looked at this, these numbers for the firms that we're working with, and it really depends. Because if there's a good ask early on, like a seminar or some kind of an engagement, they'll come around quicker. But sometimes there isn't that opportunity, and so it goes a little bit longer. And sometimes it's just, you know, the it's just going to take longer. But there is no necessarily set time, because I would continue to communicate with people until they told you not to, or, you know, whatever, because you're not selling and you're not being obnoxious or anything like that. But if they don't want to receive the emails anymore, fine, they'll unsubscribe. But if they haven't said that, why wouldn't you keep communicating with them? I mean, we've had situations where advisors have heard from a prospect years after that initial engagement. And I remember, you know, pre-COVID, this happened all the time, where somebody would go to a seminar and then a couple of years later, they decided to retire, remembered the financial advisor and got in touch with them. And it still is happening today, but it's actually even easier today, because with the impetus of being online, and it feels like we can reach our customers quicker and better than we could even before COVID, because of all of the things that are happening digitally and the ways that we can communicate with people.
So I think that that's really important. A lot of, it seems like a lot of financial advisors, sales professionals in general, you know, we all want to connect with somebody who needs our products and services, who we can have a fun working relationship with. We can help accomplish their goals, improve their situation. We can and get paid for the good work that we're doing to improve the client's situation. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to be patient with that as people get in the funnel, and it does take a little bit of time. You know, we talk with some of our advisors, especially younger advisors, and they get stuck with, well, what do I do now? I've already lunch and learned. You know, I've already, you know, done this step, and they didn't say, you know, keep moving forward. And I really like the way that you lay that out as a process. It's an ongoing process. Then I'm assuming you're measuring, you're using something like Salesforce to be the backbone of that process, and you're loading in content that you're helping the financial advisor or the financial institution create.
Yeah, it could be Salesforce. It could be one of the financial services programs like Redtail. We've used HubSpot. We've used Active Campaign, all sorts of different, you know, CRM programs available. But yeah, the CRM is that you got to have a CRM to be able to control this.
So the big question, probably the most frequently asked question to a marketing professional is, well, what's my ROI? How do I measure my ROI? How do you answer that?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no kidding. That is something that everyone asks, because if I'm going to do this, when do I get the payoff? You know, when's this going to matter? And we think about the ways that we can reach clients, and some ways are extremely expensive ways to meet clients and customers. And but if you look at how much, if you break it down to what is the lifetime value of a customer, and then you say, well, if that's the lifetime value of a customer, how much am I willing to pay to keep in touch with that customer? And most of the things that we do in marketing, it doesn't really, besides the fact that you might have somebody on your team that's doing this work, posting on social media costs you nothing. Sending out an email campaign is relatively almost free, but very, very inexpensive. You know, having a CRM program is going to cost you some, but the expense of the things that I'm talking about is not great. It's the time. So what's the time worth? Well, if you want new customers and you want to build that pipeline, we've got to be able to do that. But when you look at that lifetime value of a customer, you go, maybe I should be spending even more on doing this, because once we get them in, we've got them for savings and checking and loans, and they're investing and they're doing all of these things, right? And it's like, wow, that customer's worth a lot to us. So how do we do that? But figuring out the lifetime customer value is really important.
Yeah, I agree. So if I think this has been great. I guess a final question for you. I shouldn't say that. I've got two more questions for you. One is, though, what's the one thing for a financial institution to take away from your talk today?
Yeah, I think that we have to do active marketing. Have to do active marketing. It cannot be responsive. It needs to be, we have a campaign or we have a series of activities that we have already planned out that we are going to do. And that really makes a big difference. So that's what I would say. No matter what level you're at, if you don't have any resources or you've got a lot of resources, it's being active with your marketing and paying attention to it. I mean, there are some financial advisors that I've talked to like, oh yeah, we put up a website a couple of years ago. I don't even remember what's on there. No, we have to know what we're doing, what face we're putting out to the public. And we have to be conscious about that. But active is the word that I will use.
All right. That's a great word. So how does our audience learn more about you and Red Zone Marketing?
Yeah, so it's easy. You can go to redzonemarketing.com. That is the best way to do it. I am on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. But going to redzonemarketing.com is the best way to do it. And we've got a lot of free resources on there as well. We've got free white papers on all sorts of different topics. So we try to make it a valuable resource for marketing. So please check it out. We've got lots of videos, too, of different marketing strategies that are working.
Awesome. Well, thank you very, very much, Mary Beth, for joining us. We really appreciate you and your firm and the wisdom that you shared with us today.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be on with you.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time for the next podcast of Banking on Growth.